Okay, hey everybody. Welcome to Sharon. Welcome to Something Genuine. Tell you what, I'm going to start with a song. This song is mentioned in the talk that we're going to hear tonight, and we'll let, if we play the song first, then that gives folks an opportunity to get in the room before we start right into the recording. So hey Shauna. Let me play this song. It's a good one.
Thank you so much for your warm hospitality this evening. We are so grateful to play for you. I heard that. Thank you so much, friends. We're so privileged to be able to gather in moments like this when so much of the world is plunged in darkness and chaos. So, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. The birds, they sang at the break of day. Start again, I seem to hear them say. Away or what is yet to be. Yeah, the war, they will be fought again. The holy dove, she will be caught again. Bought and sold and bought again. Love is never free. Ring the bell that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. We asked for signs, and the signs were sent. The birth betrayed, the marriage spent.
Okay, that's a lovely song, and we could have listened to it for another 5 minutes, but but that's probably enough. Leonard Cohen. When I looked that song up, I saw a video of Leonard Cohen and Judy Collins singing a beautiful song together from 1976, and it's just fun to see them both young and vibrant, and yeah, it was really cool. So, hey, that's not the way to say goodbye, or something like that. So, if you want it more fun, more Leonard Cohen fun, go listen to that one. But not yet. Wait, let's do this program, and you, you can go later. All right, we're here for Something Genuine, and we are going to watch a TED Talk as we do. And again, the idea is that we are gleaning the wisdom from people from all walks of life who have learned the truth through their own experience. I encourage you to jot down notes as we listen to the, or as we watch the video, so that you'll remember it when it comes time to talk about it. Otherwise, all we do is we sit around and go, yeah, that was a great video. So, I will start the video. It is, what is the name of it? I'm going to tell you. It is 12 Truths I Learned from Life and Writing by Anne Lamott. And let me share my screen. Here we go. Sorry, y'all, but I need to get rid of that YouTube first, because that's pulling on resources on my computer, so it's going to take me a second to get rid of that. 1 minute. Okay. Now, for real, here we go.
My 7-year-old grandson sleeps just down the hall from me, and he wakes up a lot of mornings, and he says, you know, this could be the best day ever. And other times in the middle of the night, he calls out in a tremulous voice, Nana, will you ever get sick and die? I think this pretty much says it for me and most of the people I know, that we're a mixed grill of happy anticipation and dread. So I sat down a few days before my 61st birthday, and I decided to compile a list of everything I know for sure. There's so little truth in the popular culture, and it's good to be sure of a few things. For instance, I am no longer 47. Although this is the age I feel and the age I like to think of myself as being. My friend Paul used to say in his late 70s that he felt like a young man with something really wrong with him. Our true person is outside of time and space, but looking at the paperwork, I can in fact see that I was born in 1954. My inside self is outside of time and space. It doesn't have an age. I'm every age I've ever been, and so are you. Although I can't help mentioning as an aside that it might have been helpful if I hadn't followed the skincare rules of the 60s, which involved getting as much sun as possible while slathered in baby oil and basking in the glow of a tinfoil reflector shield. It was so liberating, though, to face the truth that I was no longer in the last throes of middle age, that I decided to write down every single true thing I know. People feel really doomed and overwhelmed these days, and they keep asking me what's true. So I hope that my list of things I'm almost positive about might offer some basic operating instructions to anyone who's feeling really overwhelmed or beleaguered. Number one, the first and truest thing is that all truth is a paradox. Life is both a precious, unfathomably beautiful gift, and it's impossible here on the incarnational side of things. It's been a very bad match for those of us who were born extremely sensitive. It's so hard and weird that we sometimes wonder if we're being punked. It's filled simultaneously with heartbreaking sweetness and beauty, desperate poverty, floods and babies and acne and Mozart, all swirled together. I don't think it's an ideal system. Number two, almost everything will work again if you unplug it for a few minutes. Including you. Three, there is almost nothing outside of you that will help in any kind of lasting way unless you're waiting for an organ. You can't buy, achieve, or date serenity and peace of mind. This is the most horrible truth, and I so resent it. But it's an inside job. And we can't arrange peace or lasting improvement for the people we love most in the world. They have to find their own ways, their own answers. You can't run alongside your grown children with sunscreen and chapstick on their hero's journey. You have to release them. It's disrespectful not to. And if it's someone else's problem, you probably don't have the answer anyway. Our help is usually not very helpful. Our help is often toxic. And help is the sunny side of control. Stop helping so much. Don't get your help and goodness all over everybody. This brings us to number four. Everyone is screwed up, broken, clingy, and scared. Even the people who seem to have it most together. They are much more like you than you would believe. So try not to compare your insides to other people's outsides. It will only make you worse than you already are. Also, you can't save, fix, or rescue any of them or get anyone sober. What helped me get clean and sober 30 years ago was the catastrophe of my behavior and thinking. So I asked some sober friends for help, and I turned to a higher power. One acronym for God is the gift of desperation, G-O-D, or as a sober friend put it, by the end I was deteriorating faster than I could lower my standards. So God might mean, in this case, me running out of any more good ideas. While fixing and saving and trying to rescue is futile, radical self-care is quantum, and it radiates out from you into the atmosphere like a little fresh air. It's a huge gift to the world. When people respond by saying, "Well, isn't she full of herself?" just smile obliquely like Mona Lisa and make both of you a nice cup of tea. Being full of affection for one's goofy, self-centered, cranky, annoying self is home. It's where world peace begins. Number five, chocolate with 75% cacao is not actually a food. Its best use is as a bait in snake traps or to balance the legs of wobbly chairs. It was never meant to be considered inedible. Number six. Writing. Every writer you know writes really terrible first drafts, but they keep their butt in the chair. That's the secret of life. That's probably the main difference between you and them. They just do it. They do it by prearrangement with themselves. They do it as a debt of honor. They tell stories that come through them one day at a time, little by little. When my older brother was in fourth grade, he had a report, a term paper on birds due the next day, and he hadn't started. So my dad sat down with him with an Audubon book, paper, pencils, and Brads, for those of you who have gotten a little less young and remember Brads. And he said to my brother, "Just take it bird by bird, buddy. Just read about pelicans and then write about pelicans in your own voice. And then Find out about chickadees and tell us about them in your own voice, and then geese. So the two most important things about writing are bird by bird and really god-awful first drafts. If you don't know where to start, remember that every single thing that happened to you is yours and you get to tell it. It's a version of things in your own voice. That's really all you have to offer us. And that's also why you were born. 7. Publication and temporary creative successes are something you have to recover from. They kill as many people as not. They will hurt, damage, and change you in ways you cannot imagine. The most degraded and evil people I've ever known are male writers who've had huge bestsellers. And yet, returning to number one, that all truth is paradox, it's also a miracle to get your work published, to get your stories read and heard. Just try to bust yourself gently of the fantasy that publication will heal you, that it will fill the Swiss cheesy holes inside of you. It can't. It won't. But writing can. So can singing in a choir or a bluegrass band. So can painting community murals or birding or fostering old dogs that no one else will. 8, families. Families are hard, 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 no matter how cherished and astonishing they may also be. Again, see 1. At family gatherings where you suddenly feel homicidal or suicidal, remember that in all cases, it's a miracle that any of us specifically were conceived and born. Earth is forgiveness school. It begins with forgiving yourself. And then you might as well start at the dinner table. That way you can do this work in comfortable pants. When William Blake said that we are here to learn to endure the beams of love, he knew that your family would be an intimate part of this, even as you want to run screaming for your cute little life. But I promise you are up to it. You can do it, Cinderella, you can do it. And you will be amazed. 9, food. Try to do a little better. I think you know what I mean. Number 10, grace. Grace is spiritual WD-40, or water wings. The mystery of grace is that God loves Henry Kissinger and Vladimir Putin and me exactly as much as he or she loves your new grandchild. Go figure. The movement of grace is what changes us, heals us, and heals our world. To summon grace, say, help, and then buckle up. Grace finds you exactly where you are, but it doesn't leave you where it found you. And grace won't look like Casper the Friendly Ghost, regrettably. But the phone will ring or the mail will come, and then against all odds, you'll get your sense of humor about yourself back. Laughter really is carbonated holiness. It helps us breathe again and again and gives us back to ourselves. And this gives us faith in life and each other. And remember, grace always bats last. 11. God just means goodness. It's really not all that scary. It means the divine or a loving, animating intelligence. Or as we learn from the great Deuteriorata, the cosmic muffin. A good name for God is not me. Emerson said that the happiest person on earth is the one who learns from nature the lessons of worship. So go outside a lot and look up. My pastor said you can trap bees on the bottom of mason jars without lids because they don't look up. So they just walk around bitterly bumping into the glass walls. Go outside, look up, secret of life. And finally, death. 12. Wow and yikes. It's so hard to bear when the few people you cannot live without die. You'll never get over these losses, and no matter what the culture says, you're not supposed to. We Christians like to think of death as a major change of address. But in any case, the person will live again fully in your heart if you don't seal it off. Like Leonard Cohen said, there are cracks in everything, and that's how the light gets in. And that's how we feel our people again fully alive. Also, the people will make you laugh out loud at the most inconvenient times. And that's the great good news. But their absence will also be a lifelong nightmare of homesickness for you. Grief and friends, time and tears will heal you to some extent. Tears will bathe and baptize and hydrate and moisturize you in the ground on which you walk. Do you know the first thing that God says to Moses? He says, take off your shoes. Because this is holy ground, all evidence to the contrary. It's hard to believe, but it's the truest thing I know. When you're a little bit older, like my tiny personal self, you realize that death is as sacred as birth. And don't worry, get on with your life. Almost every single death is easy and gentle, with the very best people surrounding you. For as long as you need, you won't be alone. They'll help you cross over to whatever awaits us. As Ram Dass said, when all is said and done, we're really just all walking each other home. I think that's it. But if I think of anything else, I'll let you know. Thank you. I was very surprised to be asked to come because it is not my realm, technology or design or entertainment. I mean, my realm is sort of faith and writing and kind of lurching along together. And I was surprised, but they said I could give a talk, and I said I'd love to.
If you don't know where to start, remember that every single thing that happened to you is yours, and you get to tell it.
People are very, very frightened and feel really doomed in America these days. And I just wanted to help people get their sense of humor about it and to realize how much isn't a problem if you take an action and take a really healthy or loving or friendly action. You'll have loving and friendly feelings.
Okay. Yeah, that was a fun one. I really liked her. Kathy wrote here a while ago she said, I really like Anne Lamott. And I responded, I'd never heard of her before. I don't know if the rest of you guys knew her or not, but yeah, but she's fabulous. So, would anyone care to share their thoughts about some or all of what she said? Kathy.
I started reading her books. I don't know. I'm going to say 20 or 30 years ago. Yeah, she's been around for me a long time. And one of the things I always loved was her sense of humor. She just has a wonderful sense of humor. I saw her live in Detroit with Oprah Winfrey and Marianne Williamson, I think it was, at like some gorgeous theater, the Fox Theater or something in downtown Detroit. It was a fabulous venue, and she made me laugh then. She still makes me laugh. And I actually shared one of her books in the sanctuary probably about, I don't know, time goes by, so maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't know. And I think the title of it was something like three words she wants us to remember, like help, thanks, and wow. Wow. And the whole book was written around that, something like that. I'd have to go look for the book. But her writing is simple. It's her direct experience in life, using her, I think she's in like a traditional church in the Marin County area of San Francisco. And it's like Episcopalian or, you know, something along those lines. but she's grounded in it, and it's her way, and she shares from that place, so it's very relatable. I just love her. I just love her. So I'm really glad that you had selected Annie Lamott, and I'll let go at that.
Cool. Thank you. It was interesting to hear her mention her pastor when she was talking about the bees, whatever they were catching in the open jars. You know, my pastor says, you don't hear that too often in these circles, do you? And Kathy, did you share that as a program? Did you read from her book as a program? Well, I don't know where I was. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Oh, it's all right. Again, the simpler the information for me, the better. And in that particular instance, I had been reading a lot of the heavier stuff, or what I call like what you shared today. I mean, you need to be paying attention every single, not that I don't want to pay attention every single instant anyway, but I really need to concentrate and listen intently when I'm, because I am not as familiar with that style of writing as I am with, say, Annie. It's more like she's telling you about her life and living this faith, living this grace, being that conduit. And she just tells it from a normal human, flaws and all, experience. And
That's perfect. It's like a good beach book, right?
Oh, for sure. There's so many good ones. So many good ones. So I appreciated that.
Well, I'll look for her stuff. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's awesome.
Next time I come to the retreat house, I'll bring the books and just leave them at the retreat house. And that way they'll be there and I'm done with them, you know, so people can read them there.
Fun. Thank you, Kathy. That's great. And then if they want to read them, they can come to my house and get them, because I won't know. No, that's very generous. Thank you, Kathy. Who else would like to share? Yes, Shauna. Shauna's always like, I don't know why. Why do you do that, Shauna? We want to hear from you. We love hearing from you. You don't need to be timid about sharing.
Sorry. I guess it's because I want everybody else to get a chance before me. It's like at the retreat house, you wait till everybody else is seated until I take a seat.
That's very generous of you, Shauna. And I knew that's what you were doing. I'm just giving you grief for it.
I'm glad. That makes me double check. So I also love Anne Lamott. She's a homie pretty much. Where I lived in Petaluma was real close to Marin County. So I've heard of her also, like Kathy, for years, 40 years, I believe. And she has this unique sense of humor with deep wisdom and faith. So that's what makes her writing so amazing. So some of the stuff that some of her 12 lists that really got me was, almost everything will work again with you if you unplug it for a while, including us.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what our practice is about, right? Unplug. These presentations have to be fast, so I didn't write everything down, but something like nothing outside of you, nothing outside of you will... Oh, I forgot it now. Try not to compare your outside with others' inside.
That's great, isn't it?
That was good, yeah. Because everyone's scared.
She said there's almost nothing outside of you that will help in any kind of lasting way, unless you're waiting for an organ.
There you go. Thank you. That was it. Thank you very much. I didn't get the rest of that down. And then the chocolate is not a food, and Dawn was right there with her 70% chocolate.
Is that what it says? I can't see it. It's too small on my screen.
Yep. Wicked dark.
Wicked dark.
So another thing about writing, just do it. And she said she had a pre-arrangement with herself to sit down, have her butt in the chair, and just do it. So I can apply that to our practice, right? Under family, she said, Earth is forgiveness school. Good stuff. Very funny about food. try to do a little better. You know what I mean?
And then, she's probably talking about those donuts I had earlier.
Exactly, muffins, exactly. And then on grace, she said a lot of really cool things on grace. But grace loves everything the same. It's spiritual WD-40. And grace comes to you exactly where you are, but doesn't leave you there.
Laughter. How profound is that? That's crazily profound line, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Meet you exactly where you are, but doesn't leave you there.
That's so cool. I love that. Doesn't leave you there. And then God under divine. Good name for God is not me. And then death as sacred as birth. This is holy ground. So those are the highlights that I just loved. So thank you, Jacqueline. This is beautiful.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you for sharing. That was great. There's just so much wisdom here. Lived wisdom. You know, she talked about Ram Dass and, Leonard Cohen, you know, so she knew two names that I know. But it's not like, I mean, you don't get the impression that she like went and she likes that line, she likes that line, so she adopted them. No, you get the felt sense of that, you know, emanating from her experience. And that's just what's so cool about her, about this talk. Who else would like to talk? Say what they liked about what, Sean called her Ann and Kathy called her Annie. So I'm not sure. Glenn. Yay.
I did write them down because I'm a very good student.
Yes, you are.
I've been listening to her for a long time. I'm very familiar. I've even seen this TED talk a couple of times
before. Oh, wow.
But I heard it. The one thing that I heard tonight for the first time, I mean, was her emphasis on self-care, you know, her real emphasis on self-care. And when people are, and that was the only sort of like critical thing, she goes, but beware, if you care about yourself, you're going to get pushback from the world. It's good. The world is going to see you as, you know, arrogant or self-centered or narcissistic or, you know, and my parents grew up as in a serving. My, you know, my dad's a pastor, you know, and my mother's a pastor's wife. So that's like double duty, you know, and four kids. My mother did aided dependent children. You know, we volunteered a lot. Service is just, it's baked into my DNA. It really, you know, in community building and service, and it's really just baked into my DNA. But the self-care piece is something that's probably the most difficult part of my own practice. To insist on getting enough rest, to insist on, not compromising on what I eat, to insist on sitting up, you know, sitting up straight, and I mean, being kind and washing, you know, and for guys, it's a trope, but to wash your hands after you go to the bathroom, you know, and clean up the sink when you get finished, you know, just prepare your food. You'll eat better if you prepare your food. You know, it's like I'll spend $40 on cocktails on a Friday night, but I don't want to buy organic stuff at the grocery store, you know. Just, and self-care is, I think I understand, and I live, a lot of my words were coming out of her mouth, or maybe what comes out of my mouth, I first heard from her, and I'm not giving her credit. I don't know. But the thing that is most difficult for me is the self-care piece as a way of giving to the world. I take care of myself so that I can give myself away, so that I can be a good parent or a good person, you know, I can be myself in the world. I'm doing it for the world. I take care of myself because I care about the world. And that's been the grittiest part of my own spiritual practice. I've got enough ego in meditation. I teach it, you know. So I can teach you meditation. I can teach you all these different skills. So I have, you know, ego in teaching people how to behave and learn and things like that. And for some reason, when I do this whole self-care bit, it feels like I'm cheating or like I'm not being myself, you know. So that's something that I'm really needing to learn. And to, I suspect that what she means about self-care and what I mean about self-care probably are a little bit differently. But it was nice to hear her say all of that. And a reminder to about families, how difficult families are and the deep, deep lessons that are with families. I call my mother my first guru, you know, and, but my only nemesis has ever been my brother. So I don't know, like there is, both of those things are true. My family has been the greatest shape and support in me in my life, and the biggest betrayal, you know, in my life has come from directly from family. So it's, she couches all of this in laughter. But every single bit of that is just deadly serious, just absolutely necessary serious, because I want to have fun. And if I don't know how to forgive and I don't know how to take care of myself, and I think the earth is, you know, there for to put my boot print in, you know, I'm going to have an awful time. It makes it difficult to play. And I want to play and I want to have fun. And I want to have fun with you and everybody here. And she kind of helps me with that attitude of to take myself maybe not so seriously, but seriously, don't take myself seriously. make a commitment to play, you know. It's like, and yes, and the last piece, and I'll quit, is to keep your butt in the chair. The people that you admire for doing something well, the only difference is they were able to keep their butt in their chair longer than you have been able to keep at it, or the skill building and things like that. And that was really encouraging for me. It's like, okay, that's really good. I'm interested in practice and that kind of commitment. And that bleeds into self-care again. So it's like, do I really want to be happy? Am I willing to do the things that are going to create the world that I want? Am I really going to do it? And it's okay to fail, and it's okay to get it wrong, and just to get up, just keep in the chair and keep trying. So it was a good reminder. I really do like this woman. I think she's absolutely brilliant. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you, Glenn. Yeah, as I said, I had not heard of her before consciously. But so it was fun to discover the video. I really appreciated the points that you brought out. You know, I think that this is exactly what A Course in Miracles is, with this self-care is exactly what A Course in Miracles is talking about when it says the sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. I think this is what Ramana Maharshi was talking about when he said the greatest service one can give the world is one's own self-realization. I think that our society says, what? You're taking care of yourself first. How dare you? Yeah, no, shame on you. And I have heard somebody talk about it in terms of, it's like when you're on the airplane, they say put on your own oxygen mask first and then help the person next to you. I'm not sure whose analogy that is, but yeah, I mean, again, particularly if we haven't put on our own oxygen mask, if we haven't turned within to a place where we're coming from, the peace that we are, if we haven't done that, then we're not helping anybody. You know, oh, let me fix your problems for you. You know, and so-and-so said that to me. Well, I just told him, it's not helpful. And unless we're coming from that centered spot, Yeah, unless we come from that centered spot where we get with practice, with keeping our butt in the chair, then it's just not helpful. Whatever we're doing, and she said that when she talked about helping others, she talked about I'm not sure why I can't.
Don't put your health on everybody.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that. Ew. but she talks about the same thing, actually, we read from a woman this morning called Dorothy Hunt, Living from Our Deepest Knowing. And the idea was, if you get yourself together, then the emanation of who you are, just the standing in who you are, is what is helpful to other people. And it's not something that you do, it's something that you be. Yeah. And I know I read it in here a while ago, or I saw it in here a while ago, heard it, but I can't find it. Doesn't matter. and both you and Shauna pointed this out about, you know, keeping your butt in the chair and I have a hard time finding my notes, but it's this. Gosh, what is it? Here it is. That's the secret of life. They keep their butt in the chair. That's the secret of life. That's probably the main difference between you and them. They just do it. They do it by prearrangement with themselves. They do it as a debt of honor. And my goodness, isn't that what we're talking about when we're talking about a commitment to practice and a commitment to living from our beingness? It is a prearrangement. It's like no matter what happens, it's like Michael Singer talks about in The Untethered Soul, you know, that commitment to unconditional happiness. You know, you're not happy if things go your way. It's a prearrangement. You have already agreed that you will live from your heart and out into the world, and that this will be your practice come what may. And so it's just really refreshing to hear y'all speak about it, to hear her speak about it here as well. So, So thanks for sharing. Kathy.
Piggybacking on what Glenn said and what she said about keeping her butt in the chair, in step three, in Gentle Healing 3, step 4 of the 7 steps to awakening, the preface starts off with, the point is to increase my desire for liberation. And Michael Langford has that line that says, you know, increase it, and I'm not sure if I get the number right, but like, increase your desire to the tune of like 14 million stars, the power of 14 million stars or something along those lines. And my mind wants to interpret that right away and say like, what the hell does that mean? I mean, I don't even know what a million stars is, let alone 14 million stars. I don't even know how to increase my desire 100%, let alone. And I kept telling myself that. I noticed I kept repeating that same distancing from the possibility that I could increase my desire to such an exponential level that it would be beyond anything I could possibly imagine. Imagine that. Well, really, I mean, and so I turned it into a situation where it's like, this is an interpretation, and I recognize that, but in order to help me appreciate what he's trying to say, what I feel like he's really trying to get to is that idea of keep your butt in the chair. Do everything you possibly can within the realm of your normal life to take those opportunities to stop, to breathe, to say a mantra, to be grateful, to notice a bird singing, to, you know, whatever it might be, and be present for that, as opposed to being with any of those things, but having the mind be, you know, thinking about Disneyland or something. You know what I mean? It's like you're not even with yourself. And so even like Glenn's talking about mindfully attending to yourself, mindful eating, mindful exercise, mindful drinking, mindful whatever company you're keeping, mindful, you know, whatever it is we're doing, to have some sense of that intention behind it.
Yes.
That intention to increase my desire to for the liberation from all of those things, all of those things that I'm trying to be mindful about, hopefully to get to the point where none of that will be a sticking point that keeps me from, you know, going, continuing on, keeping up. Not keeping up in a way, you know what I mean? Just being present to the truth of what I am, in the most mindful way I possibly can, whether it's through food or, you know, whatever it might be, whatever it might be, just be present for what is. And so, yeah, keep your butt in the chair, keep your focus, keep your intention, ask for help. I mean, what the heck? That's really it for me. And I'm gonna give it my...
Yeah, it's perfect. Thank you. And I liked that, how she said to call on grace, you just, to summon grace, say help, and then buckle up. I love it. Yeah, because it's not going to come in the form that you think it's going to come in, right? I'm often reminded of my mother tells a story that she asked one of the pastors at Unity of Louisville, years and years and years ago. She said she would like to increase her growth, her spiritual growth. So she'd been praying for that. And the woman, the lady pastor, said, "Oh my God, don't do that." Because, because that's praying for grace, right? So it's the same idea. You don't know what form that's going to come in. You want growth? I'll give you growth, right? but actually there's a real beauty in that. I mean, there's a real beauty in that. That's the happy learner. That's the willingness to say, come what may, I'm ready. And when you're in that posture, that's where you're met, right? You're met with that full measure of grace in return. So, who else would like to share? We have 5 minutes left. Dawn, are you ready to share? I saw your notes. I saw you were taking notes.
I love what she said, and I've never heard this. Her definition of God is gift of desperation. For a while, I've been feeling like, what the heck is happening? This is like a bait and switch. Like, I got on this path for what, and Regina, I'm giving you hint, a sneak peek of her article. It's all about the meaning of life is happiness, peace, and love. And that's why I was attracted to that community before and felt so drawn to A Course in Miracles and Eckhart Tolle with A New Earth, happiness, peace, and love. And then here comes life feeling like, oh, I love her words. I have to repeat them because I had to laugh. And I think this is where the shift was happening for me, because I was just like, oh my God, she could not have said it better. She says, it's almost like we wonder if we're being punked. Like, oh my God, that's it. I'm like, I feel like I'm being punked. Like, hello, I don't know if I signed up for this. And then there's the ego that when life, like maybe... I'm not quite there yet, because like I noticed there's resistance like earlier when you were saying that, but inspirational, uplifting talks such as this are really helping me to bridge that gap. Like when you're saying, be ready, be the happy learner who will let life show up however it wants to look. Well, whenever you say that, I feel like this inner clinch. Like, no! not that. And then so I'm seeing the clinch, but yet I'm actually could also laugh when she said it's almost like we wonder if we're being punked. So there's that feeling. And I love, 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 love. And when she said it, I was like, I'm taking this. This is going to be etched upon my memory forever. I'm taking this home as a saying that is going in my repertoire. Laughter is carbonated holiness. Oh my God. It is the recipe to bridge that gap. You know, when I was clenched, yay, Glenn. And that's why I love his program. The Mighty Companions. If you guys have not heard the Mighty Companions, it's 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That is their gift. Their gift to us and the community is the love, the laughter, which remember now is carbonated holiness. That's how it is so awesome. And if you see their vibrancy and yeah. Reverend Yolanda, she just exudes it. She is living carbonated holiness. So I mean, it's a hoot. And I'm just grateful and thankful for this community because whenever I find myself in that funk, because I feel like I've been punked, it's just nice that we have these programs that bring us back to the remembrance that this is where we're the grace. The grace is me. And I love that what she said. Grace will meet you right where you're at, but not leave you there.
Yeah.
That is like, oh my, just to sit in that, sit with that, meditate upon that, wake up in the morning with that etched upon my heart, get a tattoo if I need to. Seriously, because that's a good one. All right. Okay. I'm letting go.
Thanks, Dawn. That was lovely, enthusiastic. I absolutely second the opinion. The fact that Reverend Glenn and Reverend Yolanda are carbonated holiness. So really, guys, and their program is right before this one. So if you're able next week, join us and see if that isn't the truth. And Dawn, I just wanted to say, by the way, you had your papers over your computer, and so we had a hard time hearing you at first. I'm just telling you for future reference.
So sorry about that. I realized that a little ways in. I'm so sorry.
Nope. Just good to know for the future. Hey, everybody, this is such fun. Thank you for joining together in this way. We'll do it again next week, I think. Won't we do it again next week, or will I be at the retreat? There's no – nobody will do anything next week at this time, it'll right?
Be the week after.
Uh-oh. Regina, we can't hear you either.
You can't hear me? I don't have any
papers. I can
hear
you.
Oh, I can.
I think your internet's acting up, Jacqueline.
Bye. I love you.